We're reading today from the Gospel of John, chapter 10, verses 1 through 18. Very truly, I tell you, anyone who does not enter the sheepfold by the gate, but climbs in by another way, is a thief and a bandit. The one who enters by the gate is the shepherd of the sheep. The gatekeeper opens the gate for him, and the sheep hear his voice. He calls his own sheep by name and leads them out. When he has brought out his own, he goes ahead of them, and the sheep follow him because they know his voice. They will not follow a stranger, but they will run from him because they do not know the voice of strangers. Jesus used this figure of speech with them, but they did not understand what he was saying to them. So again, Jesus said to them, "Very truly, I tell you, I am the gate for the sheep. All who came before me are thieves and bandits, but the sheep will not listen to them. I am the gate. Whoever enters by me will be saved, and whoever will come in and go out and find pasture. The thief only comes to steal and kill and destroy. I came that they may have life and have it abundantly. I am the good shepherd. The good shepherd lays down his life for the sheep. The hired hand, who is not the shepherd and does not own the sheep, sees the wolf coming and leaves the sheep and runs away. And the wolf snatches them and scatters them. The hired hand runs away because a hired hand does not care for the sheep. I am the good shepherd. I know my own, and my own know me, just as the Father knows me, and I know the Father. And I lay down my life for the sheep. I have other sheep that do not belong to this fold. I must bring them along also, and they will listen to my voice. So there will be one flock, one shepherd. For this reason, the Father loves me, because I lay down my life in order to take it up again. No one takes it from me, but I lay it down of my own accord. I have power to lay it down, and I have power to take it up again. I have received this command from my Father." This is the word of God for the people of God. Thanks be to God.
Good morning. It's good to see you all this morning. Appreciate that even if you read ahead in the bulletin, you didn't decide to go ahead and leave. I've noticed as I was sitting up here, there are several college students here visiting with us or back home with us this morning. And so I'm excited to see all of your faces, and we're so glad to have you home with us this weekend. Now, something you may or may not know about me is that I love music. I majored in music in college. And I love listening to music, all types and all kinds of music. Now, since we've had children, I haven't had a lot of time to devote to listening to the kind of music that I like. We've listened to a lot of children's CDs in the car, the kind that make you want to break the CD and throw it out the window. You know what I'm talking about. You know what I'm talking about. So I've discovered over the past 7 years, especially, a love for greatest hits albums. Right? Greatest hits albums are so much easier because you've got all the hits right there on one album. So if you only have a few minutes to listen to one of your favorite artists, you can just put that in and listen. But as I've listened to greatest hits albums and studied greatest hits albums, I've found that there are some problems with greatest hits albums. There's two types of problems that I've found. The first type of problem is greatest hits albums of artists who never had any hits. And so I have some album covers to show you in case you wouldn't believe me. The first one is the greatest hits of Bruce Willis. Who's ever heard any song by Bruce Willis? The second, the greatest hits of John Tesh. Now, if there are any John Tesh fans in the house, never admit that. The next one, one of my favorites here. The greatest hits of Shaquille O'Neal. Because apparently he's quite the musician there. And then my personal favorite, and this is because this is, if I hadn't become a pastor, this is who I wanted to become. The greatest hits of Vanilla Ice. I've been imagining myself with that hair on top of my head, and I just think that would look really good. Now, there's another problem with greatest hits albums. There are some greatest hits albums that, for whatever reason, unfortunately left off one of the greatest hits of that artist. For instance, Stevie Wonder's first greatest hits album didn't have the song Isn't She Lovely. That's a travesty. Billy Joel's greatest hits album, his initial greatest hits album, left off Uptown Girl. Simple Man by Lynyrd Skynyrd. Any Skynyrd fans in the house? Don't admit that either. That was left off of their greatest hits album. Anything from the Beatles, Sgt. Pepper's Lonely Hearts Club Band, or the White Album. There were like 30 songs on the White Album. None of them are on their greatest hits album of their number one songs. Now, I bring all of this up because over the past 10 weeks, Davis has preached through the greatest hits of John. And you're sitting out here, I just want to say to you, dude, you left out my favorite song. We've preached through the Gospel of John, and we skipped over John chapter 10, which is one of my absolute favorite chapters in the Gospel of John. So I know Davis said last week would be the end of our John series, but I had to do one more week on this and get to my favorite song in John chapter 10. Now, like I said, I've always loved this section of John, especially the part in John 10:10, where Jesus says, "I have come that they might have life and have it abundantly." I mean, who doesn't want to live life to its fullest? Carpe diem. In fact, Amanda and I have this saying, if we finish a day and we've crammed everything into it that we've been able to cram into one particular day, we'll just say, man, we carpe'd that diem, didn't we? Now, this particular verse is often used as a basis for the prosperity gospel, which is a system of beliefs, a particular type of Christian theology that teaches that God ultimately wants us to be happy and God wants to bless us financially. It's a system of beliefs that teaches if we believe the right thing, if we work really hard, that God will give us financial blessing, which will lead to our happiness and fulfillment. And I've got to be honest with you, that sounds awesome. The problem with that theology, though, is in a place like this, in a community like ours, we've tested that theory out, and often we've found that that's not quite true. Let me illustrate. The average household income in the United States puts people in the top 1% income bracket in the world. And the average household income in this area of the state is at least 2 times the national average. There was a Tennessean article that I read in May that a study had come out that Williamson County has the largest houses in the nation. And we're proud to report year in and year out that our schools right here in our community are the very best in the state, some of the best in the country. And to top it all off, the Mars Company has named Nashville America's manliest city. Congratulations. So if full and abundant life is all about material blessings, and if by the world standards our lives couldn't get much more full and abundant, then why is it that so many of us still feel like something is missing from our lives? Now, how many of you are familiar with Pinterest? Pinterest is a social media site where people can post pictures of projects and ideas that they have. So if you have an idea for a home improvement project or a birthday party or anything else in the world, you can look at Pinterest and see pictures of the greatest and best ideas. Now, I'm convinced that Pinterest was actually created to make most of us feel like we're not good enough. In fact, one of my favorite things to look at recently have been some Pinterest fail pictures that have come out where people have attempted to do projects they saw on Pinterest and the results were less than stellar. I've got a couple examples. This is an example of a Cookie Monster cupcake found on Pinterest. That looks awesome. That looks great. Here's what happened when a real person tried to do that. Here's an example of a cake in the shape of a minion from the movie Despicable Me. My boys love this movie. That's awesome. Here's what happened when a real person tried to do that. And then my favorite season of the year is fall. And so this is a great idea. I mean, look at that, a smiling baby. There's leaves there. It's perfect. A real person tried that. If we look at Pinterest, or if we look anywhere else around us, there are reminders that no matter how good we are, we're not as good as we want to be. There are reminders that there is always somebody or something better. And things are not always as good as they seem. Nashville is America's manliest city, and our domestic violence rates are growing. Williamson County schools are seen as the best schools in the state and some of the best schools in the nation. Yet our students are also overperforming above the national average when it comes to substance abuse, alcohol use, high-risk behavior. Now, maybe it's just me, but I have a feeling there's somebody else in the room this morning who sometimes feels like something is missing. When the lights go out at night, when we're alone with ourselves, is there anybody else who ever feels like there's something missing from your life? At the end of the day, do you ever think, I am such a mess? Do you ever consider that on the inside you feel like a fraud, and if anybody ever knew the real you, you'd be in big trouble? Do you ever feel like you have to walk around and put up a facade, a fake front, so that nobody ever sees the real version of you? Now, from what I can tell, this is a community of people, myself included, who have the privilege of living life's greatest hits. But for many of us, it still feels like there's something missing. And so now we turn to the story in John chapter 10 where Jesus talks about true abundant life. Jesus tells this parable in response to what's happened immediately prior to this in John chapter 9. In chapter 9, just before our text for today, Jesus heals a man who had been born blind, and he heals him on the Sabbath. Now, this causes a controversy with the religious leaders because according to them, Jesus has broken a law in this healing. And so the Pharisees launch into an investigation into this healing, and eventually they throw the formerly blind man out of their presence. And so in response to the action of the Pharisees, Jesus uses shepherd imagery in telling this parable to make a contrast between two different groups who might attempt to lead the sheep. There is a rich biblical tradition throughout the Old Testament of shepherd and sheep imagery that the people listening to Jesus would have been very familiar with. There are passages describing God as the good shepherd. Psalm 23, the Lord is my shepherd, I shall not want. Isaiah 40:11, he tends his flock like a shepherd. He gathers the lambs in his arms and he carries them close to his heart. There are also passages throughout the Old Testament talking about bad shepherds who lead their people astray. Jeremiah 10:21, the shepherds are senseless and do not inquire of the Lord, so they do not prosper and all their flock is scattered. And there are passages describing a future shepherd who will lead the people. In Jeremiah, God says, I will give you shepherds after my own heart who will lead you with knowledge and understanding. And so, building on the image of the bad shepherd, Jesus says the thief comes to steal and kill and destroy. You see, Jesus is clear, and so many of us have experienced this, that there are teachings and there are ways of living that lead to dying in every sense of the word. There are ways of life that lead to brokenness and death and destruction. You see, for Jesus, all roads do not lead to the same destination. All ways of approaching God to Jesus are not created equal. There are shepherds who will lead you astray, those who will lead you in the wrong direction, those who will lead you into a misunderstanding of the nature and character and love of God. There are those who will lead you to give your lives to things that ultimately don't matter. And although Jesus here is speaking particularly against the Pharisees' teaching in this particular context, I think the thief that Jesus describes who comes to kill and steal and destroy could easily include anything that takes the driver's seat in our lives. Materialism, political affiliation, spiritual relativism, the desire to be in charge, the drive for success, the desire to assert our power over other people. Any way of living or thinking that we allow to become the ruler over us, obsessing over perfection, fashion, sports, cars, homes, putting anything other than Jesus at the center of our lives. But Jesus goes on to say, "But I came that they may have life and have it abundantly." The repeating message of the Gospel of John is that Jesus has come to bring life to us by laying down his own life. And that only Jesus can give us life to its fullest. There are ways of life that lead to death, but there are ways of life that lead to even more and greater and fuller life. In verse 11, Jesus says, "I am the good shepherd. The good shepherd lays down his life for the sheep." Now, when I think of sheep and shepherd today, I usually think of sheep running around on a lush farm with a big fence. And maybe the role of a shepherd is to go out and feed the sheep a couple times a day and then to eat them. That's just good mutton chop, Jeff? Absolutely. But shepherding in Jesus' part of the world was and is very different from the picture that I have in my head, even to this day. In February, I had the opportunity to travel to Israel and to walk around in the Judean wilderness, which is a land of sheep and shepherds. And so I've got a picture here of the terrain of where shepherds lead their sheep in this part of the world. Looks nothing like a lush green farmland to me. You can just see the top of a shepherd's head as he's walking down into the valley. I have another picture of the shepherd on the mountainside with his sheep. You can see there is some scrub brushes there for them to eat. And they have to travel day and night looking for food and looking for water in a place like this. A shepherd is with the sheep day and night, guiding them over this terrain, helping them to find food and water. Shepherds have to be on guard night and day to protect their sheep from wild animals and robbers and bandits. And there are many stories of shepherds to this day who have literally laid down their life in order to protect their sheep. In the story of David and Goliath, David is a shepherd. And when they say to David, "You're just a small boy, how can you take on this giant?" He says, "I've killed lions and I've killed bears in order to protect my sheep. This guy's nothing." Now, sheep in this part of the world are often kept for wool and not for food. And so because of that, shepherds are often with their same flock for a number of years. They're with their sheep day in and day out for years and years and years. And so they come to know their sheep very well. They often give their sheep names based on physical attributes that the sheep have, like brown leg, black ear. At the end of every day, the shepherd inspects his sheep to check for injury. And so the shepherds know their sheep by name. They know their personalities and their flaws. They carry them when they're injured. They lead them. They rescue them when they're in danger. They do everything they can to protect them. Abundant life for the sheep isn't dependent on the effort of the sheep. It's solely dependent on the effort of the shepherd. And so Jesus, knowing everything that a shepherd knows and is willing to do for his sheep, says, "I am the good shepherd." Amanda and I had the opportunity last week to go to a church leadership conference in Southern California, and we had a couple days as tourists as well. Several of you have commented about our pictures on Facebook. I promise we were there most of the time on business. While we were attending the conference, a woman by the name of Danielle Strickland spoke at one of the sessions. Now, Danielle Strickland is a major in the Salvation Army in Edmonton, in Canada. She spends her days on the streets ministering to women in brothels and praying with drug addicts. Now, I must admit, I didn't exactly know what to expect when I read we were going to have a major in the Salvation Army speaking to us, but she was nothing like what I expected. She was incredibly energetic, passionate, engaging, and the stories of her work were inspiring. Now, she described herself as a hyperactive extrovert, and she said she was the type of person who, when she gets tired, becomes even more hyper. Do you know anybody like that? So she said she was on a plane, on a flight, late one afternoon, and she had grown very tired. So she was feeling very hyper and energetic. And she was sitting by herself in the front row. And she said, if you want to torture a hyper extrovert, make them sit alone on a plane. Well, as the plane was about to leave and they were about to shut the door, she said five Muslim women walked into the plane wearing burqas. And four of them walked to the back of the plane, but one of them came and sat down in the seat right next to her. So she said the plane started and it took off and it was quiet for a few minutes. And she said, I finally couldn't take it anymore. And so I just leaned over and said, hello. She said the woman looked at her. They struck up a conversation and she found out that this young woman had just graduated from a fundamentalist Islamic school where her dad was the principal. She also went on to share that she had just won the award for evangelism and her specialty was converting Christians to Islam. Danielle Strickland said she was so excited in that moment and she looked at her and said, well, I'm a Christian. Try me. And so she said the young woman launched into a very thorough explanation of her faith. She said it was very well thought out, very well done. And she finished and said, how'd I do? And Danielle Strickland said, you did pretty well. And then they sat there in silence for another couple minutes. Then she said the young woman looked at her and said, well, why don't you take a turn? Very excited, she said, okay. She said, well, my story's not nearly as good as yours. And I don't have a detailed explanation like you do, but here's the gist of it. Several years ago, I found myself in a jail cell addicted to drugs. And I prayed, Jesus, if you're real, I'm going to need some help because I can't get out of this situation on my own. And she said, that moment changed my life. And from then on, I've been doing everything I can to follow Christ every day of my life. She said the woman was silent for another minute. And then she looked over at her and said this, would you like to see my face? And Danielle said, of course, I'd love to see your face. And she said the young woman who was a teenager looked back toward the back of the plane toward her mother to kind of make sure she wouldn't get in trouble. And then she uncovered her face. And Danielle said she was the most beautiful young woman she'd ever seen. that her face was alive with radiance and beauty and the innocence of youth. Well, she covered her face back, and a few minutes later, she looked at Danielle again and said, "Was I what you were expecting?" Now, it's not our practice in this particular community to cover ourselves with burqas. But I'd say it's very much our practice in this community for many of us to hide who we really are, to put on a false front, to make sure everyone here sees and knows the very best version of ourselves. But you see, in Jesus, we have a shepherd who came to lay down his life for the real version of us. The version we don't let anybody else see. We have a shepherd who came to lay down his life for the version of us that has blemishes and mistakes and inadequacies and failures. Would you like to see my face? What a powerful question. I think that question could change everything about how we operate in our relationship with God and in our relationship with each other, even here in this community. Can you imagine if we made that a practice in our classes and in our groups and in our interactions with one another to simply say, "Would you like to see my face? Would you like to see my face?" My name is Travis Garner. I'm an ordained elder in the United Methodist Church. And I have to admit that I feel horribly inadequate in every sense of the word. And when I think about myself, I know that I'm not smart enough. I'm not spiritual enough. I'm not faithful enough. I'm not bold enough. I'm not courageous enough. And I only stand before you today by the grace of God. Anything that I am has nothing to do with my effort or my ability. It has everything to do with the grace of God through Jesus Christ. Would you like to see my face? You see, we've bought into the myth in our culture that we can achieve fulfillment in life by our own effort, even though we keep finding ourselves disappointed with the results. But we have a God, a good shepherd in Jesus, who sees us for who we really are. He knows your name. He sees your face as it really is. He knows your imperfections. He knows your greatest failures. He knows what you're most proud of. He knows what you're most ashamed of. He sees your face. He knows who you really are. And he laid down his life for that version of you. We have a shepherd who laid down his life for us. And so if you're looking for full and abundant life this morning, there is no better place that you can go than to the good shepherd that we find only in Jesus. In the name of the Father, and of the Son, and of the Holy Spirit. Amen.